Love Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Mental Health Hotline. If you are obsessive compulsive, press 1 repeatedly. If you are codependent, ask someone to press 2 for you. If you have multiple personalities, press 3, 4, 5, and 6. If you are paranoid, we know what you are and what you want. Stay on the line and we'll trace your call. If you're delusional, press 7 and your call will be transferred to the mothership. If you are schizophrenic, listen carefully and a small voice will tell you which number to press. If you're depressive, it doesn't matter which number you press, no one will answer you. If you're dyslexic, press 69696969. If you have a nervous disorder, please fidget with the hash key until the beep. After the beep, please wait for the beep. If you have a short-term memory loss, please try your call again later. And if you have low self-esteem, hang up. All our operators are too busy to talk to you.
Good evening, folks. Welcome to another episode of Lori's Talk News Radio, Tuesday, February the 19th, 2013. This evening from Down Under again, I guess it's Down Under there too, we have Vincent or Vinny Eastwood from New Zealand. And he's apparently the only alternative media down there, it sounds like. Got him on, trying to get some alternative views on what's going on from outside this country, but still show the similarities of what's going on through a lot of these nations, with be it the bankers or whatever it is that we have here. And there's a lot of similarities. We had Leon on a while back from Australia. He told many of the same stories. So without any further ado, I'd like to welcome Vincent to the show. And asking that, first of all, should I call you Vincent or Vinny?
Everybody just calls me Vinny. Haven't been called Vincent by anyone in quite a long time, actually.
Okay, it's just your name came across as Vincent, so that's why I was calling in, and then Suzanne said that it was Vinny, so okay, Vinny it is. So you do your own radio talk show down there in New Zealand, is that right?
I do. As far as I know, the only New Zealander who has a talk radio show based in the USA in history.
Okay, well, why don't you tell us a little bit about your show and what you do and talk about down there so that people that may not have heard of you before, familiar with New Zealand down there, have an idea of what you are all about.
Okay, you're familiar with Alex Jones?
Yeah.
Okay, I've been described as sort of the Alex Jones of New Zealand, whereas I'd rather describe Alex Jones as the Vinny Eastwood of America. And I try to cover as much as humanly possible along a broad spectrum. So I don't cut anything out. You know, I don't refuse to talk about aliens or indigo children or time travel or all the kind of weird stuff that you would hear on spaced out radio shows and even say coast to coast and whatnot. I get the real big top quality, big name guests, as well as people who are complete unknowns. It's essentially a listener-supported show. Every single guest that we've had on the show pretty much has been the result of listeners requesting them. And that's really all I'm there to do, is just make sure the archiving is done and the show goes to air every single day with myself as the host, and that all these different people from all over the world covering whatever issue they're talking about have a fun and enjoyable experience on the air so that people can see a different side of them, maybe a side of them that perhaps they wouldn't reveal to on other radio shows where the tone is a bit more serious, because I like to talk about anything, and as a result I'm kind of a flippant, jovial character. And like to laugh and make jokes, but just basically, there's really only one rule to the show: it's to have fun. And it's really uplifting for me because I get people who've had attempts on their life, people who've had their homes and in some cases families taken, and I get to give them an opportunity to laugh and enjoy life for a couple of hours when nobody else will.
Right, so it's kind of the interviewer gets interviewed. I've had a few of that, like the Hagmans have come on, and it's I kind of like it because it's almost like the interviewers get to be the interviewees here, so it's kind of neat.
Yeah.
I take it then you discuss a lot of what's called or frequently referred to as the New World Order stuff, the banker takeover, militarization of the police, UN and Agenda 21, the chemtrails, this kind of stuff. Get into some of those subjects with us just real briefly, and then we'll get into brass tacks, as we say here. I don't know if y'all say it there, but we say it here.
Well, what's funny is that just before coming on air with you today, I was having a conversation with my friend Anthony Ravlich, who's a human rights campaigner and has a book published at the UN. And we were having a discussion about how the global banker takeover and the agenda to get people's weapons off them and things of that nature is really the historical turning point whereby you descend from liberty into tyranny. And it's starting to happen here in New Zealand. And there's this new prospect coming out by the Labour Party to what they call pull New Zealanders up from their grassroots, from their bootstraps and what have you. And my point was, look, if you're going to try and pull somebody up from the grassroots, what role are they asking for public education here? Public education doesn't teach kids how to create a business, doesn't teach them how to market a product, make a product, or create anything. It just teaches them to be slaves in a system, to go out and get a job, be just over broke, that's what job means, and essentially spend preferably their entire life working for some other scumbag who they may or may not agree with, who get pushed around all day long every day in order to get a cheap gold watch at the end and maybe have their pension stolen. And that's basically what the government education system is really about. So if you were going to try and pull a country up from its grassroots, that's what you do. But because we're living under a fracking new world order full of scumbag sociopathic pieces of trash, that's not on the agenda at all. It doesn't matter which political party you go to. They all sing from the same fracking song sheet, which is the individual does not matter. Your liberties are sacrificed for the good of the collective. There is Agenda 21 being implemented in every single sector of this country. It's beyond a joke. And I've not freaked out in quite some time until today, because you mentioned chemtrails. And incidentally, I had Dane Wigington. You're familiar with the term wigging out. He was the reason why that term was created. No, I'm just kidding. And he was talking about the chemtrails that are happening all over the planet and how there have been literally a million times or a million percent increase in the measurable level of aluminium particulates in the atmosphere, right? A million percent increase. Holy shit.
Yes, no, and they don't seem to know where it's coming from.
Yeah. Well, see, it's right in front of their face, right above their heads, and they see it every day. And they don't know. Isn't that interesting? The big elephant in the room.
Yeah, well, you brought up several things there. The education I'd like to get back into, the Agenda 21 and the chemtrail. But before we go there, I would like to bring up and get an input from there where you guys are at in New Zealand, because I'm not familiar. It's funny, y'all, when I say y'all, I mean anybody and everybody outside the state seems to be more familiar with what's going on in this country than most people that live here, which is a crying shame. But nonetheless, that seems to be the fact of the matter. Are you guys partially or totally disarmed, as is in Canada, UK, and Australia?
Yes.
Okay, the reason I ask is, and I have made a point on this show, and I want to hit this point before we get any further on this. You know, there's been a small arms ban treaty from the United Nations and all kinds of things. You can go back to Waco, you can go to 9/11, you can go to Ruby Ridge, on and on and on it goes. Point is, they want us disarmed, and one of the things I keep trying to tell people, we have been told by, warned by the Canadians, the UK people, the Englishers, whatever it is to call, and the Aussies, whatever you do, don't let them take your guns. Are you guys of that same ilk, of that same genre? Are you warning us, don't let them take your guns?
When you say you guys, bear in mind, I'm a fairly unique person in this country. There isn't another talk radio show host in this country. This whole country, about 4 million people, 5 million New Zealanders globally, about 20% of our indigenous population lives in other countries overseas and what have you, and I'm the only person with a radio show and a YouTube channel talking about this stuff in this whole fracking country.
Really?
Uh-huh. To any great effect, anyway. I mean, I've got a magazine here for those of you who will be watching the video later on my YouTube channel, Mr. News Guerrilla Media, called Uncensored, and the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine. As far as alternative media in this country, that's really about it. There's me and there's them. And a couple of other people. I try to collaborate with everybody in this country who is doing something in terms of media to try and get the truth out and stuff like that. But in terms of a 5-day-a-week radio show, YouTube videos every single day, new archives every single day, and bringing on the top A-list guests from the United States and the UK and Canada and Ireland and Australia and New Zealand and all of that kind of stuff, there is no one else. Not in this country.
Okay, well, let me rephrase the question then. Do you share that sentiment that whatever we Americans do, do not let them disarm us?
I would say have a look back on the lessons of history, and if you were to look at any country that has ever had large sections of its population exterminated by government, the only common thread that they all have, the only common thread, is strict gun bans.
Exactly, and it's always, always preceded by registration. And that's the point that I wanted to get at. Okay, so now we got that out of the way. This whole thing, you mentioned UN Agenda 21, and I suppose that would be as good of a place because a lot of these things seem to be either coming directly out of the United Nations or certainly tied with or affiliated to the United Nations. Everything from the deliberate dumbing down of America, as Charlotte Disraeli speaks about, although it seems to be of the world. The chemtrails seem to be coming out of there. The gun bans seem to be coming out of there. And the militarization of the police. Leon Picard was on the show. And one of the reasons I have you guys, whatever, representatives or to whatever degree from other countries, is to share similarities that are taking place in those countries that we're either seeing in parallel, or maybe it seems like there's a couple of 4-year gaps sometimes, maybe, but the legislation, the point is they're moving us in a direction and they get a little bit here and a little bit different piece over there, but they're all heading in the same place. So where's this all going with you guys? Is property being taken, the militarization of the police, losing of your rights, and this type of thing?
Well, let's see. Let me just make some notes here so I don't go off track. So, militarization of police, people's rights, and people's property. Was there any other points that you mentioned in there? Guns? Yeah.
Guns, chemtrails. Just basically the losing of...
All right. Hold on. Let me stop you and just begin. Okay. So, militarization of police. New Zealand has passed a legislation called the Search and Surveillance Bill. The Search and Surveillance Bill allows police or anybody else without a warrant to surveil you and even break into your house and install cameras for up to 3 days without a warrant and no judicial oversight if they don't find anything and no reviews of said processes and no records kept of any kind. They can charge you with receiving things in the future. So if you were charged with receiving stolen documents and then those stolen documents turned up in your letterbox a couple of years later, you then spend your life in prison. The militarization of the police in Taumara Nui, a small New Zealand town, about maybe a few thousand people live there, maybe less. A man was seen running around with a gun, allegedly pointing it at families. The police detained him at 11:30, about 50 New Zealand police descended on the town. The first group of people came in via a helicopter, all wearing their black ski masks and military police outfits and things of that nature. They caught them at 11:30 in the morning, and at about 1:30 in the afternoon, they still had all roads in and out of the town blocked with heavily armed police, some of which wearing road worker uniforms, pointing their weapons at everybody who came past and stopping them and searching their cars. So the solution to somebody allegedly pointing weapons at families is to point weapons at families. That's the police. In terms of rights, in this country, you don't have any. We're in a parliamentary sovereign democracy, which means your rights are malleable to what the state wishes. You once had the right to free speech. I don't even know if that really exists anymore. You know, I don't know whether or not I'm under surveillance or whether or not the things that I'm saying are going to be put out. My friend Penny Bright gets routinely kicked out of council meetings because she goes in there and enforces speaking rights, which she's supposed to have, and then they get private security to haul her out of there because she talks about the corruption in the water care system over here, where they're charging people too much for their water rates and taking things away from them in that regard. And also local government corruption, business roundtable groups who were instrumental in putting in what's affectionately known as the super city. Now, the reason why Penny Bright gets dragged out of these council meetings by security is because she got arrested 22 times by the New Zealand police at council meetings and refused to leave and was subsequently arrested. 21 out of those 22 times, she wound up beating the council in court, and now the police no longer come to council meetings to remove people, so they had to hire private security instead. And the super city is a piece of legislation. There are 9 different counties or councils in the Auckland region, which is the largest, most populous region in New Zealand. It's where all the tourists and new immigrants and things like that invariably come. It's known as a primate city. A primate city is usually a city that is easily head and shoulders, like about on average twice the size of the next biggest city in the country. And this is a phenomenon shared by a number of different nations. And they decided to force amalgamate these 9 different local, separate, independent and elected councils to make one, which you only have one vote for a Lord Mayor and one vote for what's called a region councillor. You'd know them as FEMA regions. And the Lord Mayor can then, after being elected, handpick a unappointed cabinet to oversee the entire city. So it's just a sham in the first place. Now, they promised everybody that all their rates would come down. Rates have gone up. They promised everybody that they would keep rates down to the rate of inflation, but they didn't tell people that the council can now make up its own rate of inflation. Massive bureaucracy, huge disparity in what people can vote for and what people get, huge delays in things as simple as a water main bursting would take up to a week to fix, whereas previously in councils they'd be there within an hour or two. Massive increases in costs in West Auckland, where I live. People have, I think they were billed like $100 every 3 months, and now they're billed close to $100 a month. So it's like a 300% increase in the charging of water. And that's just in one region. There's other regions elsewhere where they've had substantial increases. Other regions, not so much of an increase at all. I don't think anybody's had a decrease. I'd have to check my facts on that. But
what you just described with the helicopters and being arrested in court—that sounds like something that could almost happen in, I don't know, say Detroit or New Orleans. Oh, wait a minute! It has happened there. It is happening, folks. It's happening here. It's happening there. It's happening in Australia. It's happening in Canada. It's happening in England. And they're doing this all over. And this is why people like Vinnie and I are out here. I don't know about you, Vinnie. I had the last thing in my mind was ever doing a radio show of any kind, let alone doing 7 days a week for 2 hours or more a day, but this has got to get out. And it, are you seeing people wake up?
No.
No. You want to reconsider that?
I'll reconsider it once I see the evidence. In general, okay. No. I've got people who are already awake, who find me and start listening to me and come around and buy me beer and we have a drink and stuff like that, but they're already very awake. And in terms of new people waking up, I don't know. I honestly don't know. I can't measure it, because unless you're actually out there taking a survey, excuse me, do you believe 9/11 is an inside job? Yes, no? Okay, thank you very much. We'll put you in and do some kind of a survey. You'd have no fracking idea, would you? Because we're a very cryptic species, like sea slugs, us truthers and conspiracy activists and what have you. We're very difficult to find, which is probably why the New Zealand government is now doing a massive census. I was just wondering, you know, if they're going to put on a religion there. 9/11 was an inside job religion. That'd be great. But, yeah, I honestly don't know. I do know that the support for me and my show, both quantitatively and indeed financially for the people that are donating to me, is increasing at, and for me, a very humbling rate. I am so honored to be the voice of reason in this country at 28.
There's a sign right there. When people open their pocketbooks, you know that they're getting serious about it and trying to support getting word out. And you mentioned water rights earlier. Are they putting fluoride in y'all's water? Do you have the genetically modified foods down there? Are they labeled if you have them? Do you have a choice? Or do you even know?
No, we don't have a choice. Most of the cities are fluoridated, and I remember calling up the local water care council to tell them about the dangers of fluoride and how bad it is for us and everything, and the lady got really angry with me and hung up the phone. So it's and in fact, here's a plug for you, Dr. Paul Connett. You know Dr. Paul Connett, don't you?
Yes, I'm aware with him. I need to see if I can get him on. If you have contact, get him mine, please. I'd love to have the man on the show.
All right. Well, I'm going to film him on Friday night. He's doing a tour of New Zealand at the moment, so I'm going to film him on Friday night at the Hillsborough Room in the Fickling Centre, 546 Mount Albert Road. I don't know if that means anything to you, but fluoridation is pretty rampant in this country. There was a success story, I think maybe the 10th largest city in New Zealand, named New Plymouth, recently had the fluoride taken out of the water as a result of my good friend and colleague Mary Byrne, who is the head of the FANS, the Fluoride Action Network New Zealand. And she even got on the mainstream media breakfast program with a dentist to have a debate. And what I found very interesting about this debate, while she was talking about the massive quantities of damage that fluoride does to the human body, to the brain, to the IQ, and to the lymphatic system and all of these other kind of stuff. And the dentist was repeating, of course, the BS rhetoric that it's good for your teeth and what have you. And I, for me personally, it seems a bit disingenuous for dentists to be in favor of something that's good for your teeth that would make you not require a dentist. Isn't he selling himself out of the job? And it turns out that dentists are actually making more money off dental fluorosis, which is a reaction to the fluoride, than they are off cavities these days anyway. and even if it was actually good for your teeth, which it's not, kids who have dental problems don't drink the fracking water. They drink fizzy drinks, which is the reason why their teeth are so fracked. So it's insane in any way you look at it. And what was more insane is that while these two people were having this debate, they had stock footage of a council worker in a hazmat suit dumping sacks of this fluoride into a decanter going directly into the water supply. In what universe do you suddenly need a hazmat suit for something that's so good for your health? These people are freaking crazy.
Now, what about vaccinations? Are you guys having...
Oh, we've got a massive vaccine program here. Catherine Smith, who is the editor of the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine, has started up noforcedvaccines.org.nz here in this country. We have a schedule that is not anywhere near as prolific and as wide-ranging as the United States. We have a number of different shots. I forget the number. I think it might be 15 or so vaccinations before the age of 5, which is pretty insane, really, when you think about the number of it, whereas here in the States it's somewhere around the region of 50 before the age of 5. And there is a staunch 5% of the population, it's about 1 in 20, who refuse vaccination. Now the local school systems, they're doing a big, or rather they were doing, a round of submissions and things of that nature on the vaccine issue. And the question of this submissions form was, how do we increase the number of people in New Zealand being vaccinated? Not whether or not the vaccinations are good, or whether or not there's any scientific evidence to prove that they're safe or effective, which there isn't! It's actually
that's irrelevant.
Let's just give them more, because more is obviously better. You know, like if you're eating McDonald's or something and you're starting to get fat and really unhealthy and get hypertension and stuff, the solution is obviously more McDonald's. But but they don't seem to see it that way. And I did film, and thank you, Catherine, if you ever listen to this, for paying me for filming while I had the flu, mind you. They gave me some high-dose lipospheric citric vitamin C kind of sachets and stuff like that, what really helped with this really mad flu that I had at the time. I thought it was very interesting that I was in there very sick with the flu and with all these allegedly healthy board members and stuff like that who were really, really scared the frack out of catching the flu from me. And I wish, you know, that they'd all gotten sick off of me being there, but I don't know if there's any evidence of that. Just like I don't know if there's any evidence that vaccines are safe or effective. But yeah, they want to vaccinate children as a requirement of going to public schooling. And it's like nigh on illegal to do homeschooling in this country now.
Yeah.
Nigh on illegal. It's insane. And it reminds me of... Somebody told me once that there was the first and the last pieces of legislation that Nazi Germany passed discriminating against people. The first round of people that were discriminated against via legislation wasn't Jews, wasn't blacks, wasn't gays, it was homeschoolers. And the last people to have their rights taken away, again, weren't Jews, they weren't gypsies, they were gun owners. So you think about it, this is how they get you first. First, they take away your ability to have your own children under your own upbringing and your own rules so that you can force them into government indoctrination so you can get them to report on their family and what have you, or whatever. And lastly, you take away their last line of defense. And you, there's a broad spectrum in between there of all these other separate rights and things that were taken away from people step by step. And that's what's happening to this country. It's what's happening to your country. It's what's happening to every single country. I've got this old saying, it's called a new world order. Name me a country that is exempt from that definition. Doesn't exist. What are you going to do? Escape to the frickin' moon?
Well, but Vinny, at least you guys don't have chemtrails there. Though,
yes,
like
we do. We got chemtrails, crazy man. There's chemtrail watch activism groups that are popping up in New Zealand every other week now that I'm seeing, and we're a very small country. So for that many people to start noticing that there's chemtrails all over the place, you know, I get text messages every other day from listeners north of me, south of me, west and east of me, telling me, "Hey, Vinny, did you see this chemtrail? Or they're spraying real hard today, or something like that." It's happening all the time, all over the whole fracking country, and we've managed to catch quite a number of them on video as they're flying over us. And what's interesting is that they don't operate under normal flight paths. I mean, I live directly beneath a flight path, and the ones that are chemtrailing, they operate at different altitude. Like the ones who are coming over me, directly, they're usually at about maybe 10,000 feet coming into land. The chemtrail ones, always around 40,000 feet, cruising altitude, right over the whole fracking city, with very little wind and drag and things like that. So when the chemtrail comes out of it, it stretches across from one horizon to the other and doses us all. And this is happening in rural areas, it's happening in the urban areas, it's happening all over the fracking place. Our asthma rates are out of control, Alzheimer's and autism rates are shooting up like there's no fracking tomorrow. Very small country, and only with a small amount of chemtrails comparatively. Like, you know how you sometimes get those grid patterns sprayed on massive cities like London or Los Angeles and things of that nature? Never happened here. I've never seen more than one chemtrail at a time. But because this country's so small and its landmass is just an island chain and what have you, that one chemtrail has a massive effect. In order for water to be contaminated with aluminium to the point where it's not drinkable, the aluminium level only has to be one part per million. So one spraying of a chemtrail that goes into the reservoirs automatically contaminates the entire city's drinking water supply to beyond toxic levels.
Well, now that's something else, too, I wanted to get into, because with these genetically modified foods that we brought up before, I'm assuming you guys have containers, juice containers, have this BPA, this bisphenol A.
Yes.
Are you guys noticing the rash of infertility there and the fertility clinics popping up like
this? We have one of the lowest fertility rates in the world. And me personally, me and my girlfriend have been having relations unprotected for 6 years. Not even so much as a pregnancy scare. So I'm certainly a bit concerned that I might be fracking sterile. You know, like that's how bad the situation is. What else were we talking about? You're talking about the GMOs and the foods. Well, there's a large movement inside New Zealand to get rid of GMO foods. So you see people driving around with bumper stickers and things like that saying keep New Zealand GE free. We call it GE as opposed to GMO. GE meaning genetically engineered, GMO meaning genetically modified organism. It's the same Shiite Muslim, different country. But I now am going out to see... corn growing on the side of the road with these strange signs on the corn. Like, have you ever seen a row of corn that has a sign on it with this number and what have you? I'd never seen that until a couple of years ago. And now apparently they're growing GM corn all over the country. My friend John Eisen, who incidentally wrote this, does this magazine Uncensored. I've been plugging them quite a lot during this interview. It's worth it. He also wrote a book called The GE Sellout, whereby all the authorities that were supposed to be looking into, investigating, or if necessary, restraining farmers and or corporate entities from growing or even testing genetically modified organisms or genetically engineered corn or anything like that in this country have all been getting paid off by the massive mega agribusinesses from the United States into looking the other way. And when you have corn growing, or anything for that matter growing, apparently one of the big concerns here is supergrass. They're feeding it to our cows and what have you, allegedly. I haven't really seen the documentation on that. But once a plant is growing and once it seeds, it gets carried by the wind and it can contaminate any other crop that's similar to that. So supergrass can contaminate all the regular grass if given the wind. Normal supercorn can contaminate the rest of the corn in the country given the wind. You know what I'm saying? So that's why it was really illegal to grow these things here, and that's why they had to be paid, all these government agencies, to look the other way by the massive mega agribusiness.
Right. They've had massive problems with that in Mexico with their corn/maize crops. They've tried destroying it, and they can't. It's losing battle. And in Monsanto Atoll has got the gall and audacity to sue them because they have their genetic patented genetic material there when it's the winds that carry their perverted seed pollen over into there and is destroying their crop. Now, on the I don't know what you all have there for regulatory. Here we call it the FDA, Food and Drug Administration. little short history. It basically was started because we had snake oil salesmen. They were making a killing, selling people virtually nothing, and they were supposed to protect we the people, so we knew what we were putting in our mouth. And now, much along the lines of what you just said, we have this revolving door here, be it Big Pharma, be it Big Agra, and the FDA, where they sit on the boards, and then they go in there on the advisory boards and back and forth and get bonuses, so on and so forth. And the FDA has told us as a whole, we have no right to know if we are eating genetically modified foods, and therefore it does not have to be labeled. Do you guys have the same thing?
We have a Food Safety Authority, FSA, as opposed to the FDA, who do basically the same thing. And it's interesting you mentioned snake oil salesmen. Do you know who the most successful snake oil salesman of all history was?
Food and Drug Administration?
No, a man named Big Bill Rockefeller, who was the Primarch of the Rockefeller family. And he was the very first person to come up with franchising. He franchised a brand of snake oil, and he would get entire regions scammed at the same time and collect a section of profits from each of these individual con men that he would get to sell his snake oil. And that's where the Rockefeller family fortune started. He then put it into oil and bought out and he used basically the same tactics, you know, bought out all the barrels so that his competition couldn't frickin'. I mean, just have a look into the history of the Rockefeller family and their oil interests. It's scary stuff. Anyway.
I've looked into that. You can't talk about this too long before you start running into Rockefeller and Carnegie and Rothschild and that whole crowd there.
Okay, so but anyway, I wanted to go on to something because you mentioned Monsanto. Now, under New Zealand legislation or legislation that's been introduced called quote-unquote the Food Bill, which is to protect people from food contamination, which killed 6 people last year, they're introducing legislation to prevent you from being able to share seeds to sell fruit and vegetables at farmers markets without a license and things of that nature. And on the other side of things, food killed 6 people. Registered medical treatments that are approved by the New Zealand medical boards killed 6,000. And that's only the reported ones. And allegedly the unreported cases are about 10 times that. So let's say 60,000 people died last year because of registered medical treatments. So you've got 6 versus 60,000. What do they pass the legislation banning against? The thing that kills the 6. And guess who's going to be enforcing all of this? Private mercenaries. That's right, you heard correctly. Armed private mercenaries who are immune from prosecution will be able to come onto your property, point a gun at you, command you to put down that frickin' turnip, and destroy your home garden. All right? Are we living in the frickin' Twilight Zone or what? And guess who just bought the world's largest private mercenary company? Monsanto! A company called Blackwater, which was famed for having its agents in Iraq as private contractors, tripping balls on acid, driving around shooting innocent people, changed their name to Z in order to avoid some of the bad name that they had. See, when your company gets a bad name, don't clean up your act, just change the frickin' name. I love it.
Well, I'm glad you see the humor in it because it frequently escapes me. But this whole thing with it, and it's interesting you brought up this about private mercenaries, because this gets into another area that I wanted to touch base with you on, and that is something that Leon and I had gotten into, and then I got into with Scott, I'm drawing a blank on his last name, the guy with the Corvette that he imported.
Scott Bartle.
Yes, Bartle. And he found out that, much like we're finding out here, there are 2 governments here. One of them is a corporation that he said he found ties directly back to Washington, D.C. But do you guys have the same thing here that ties back to the Crown, the Vatican, and D.C.?
Yeah.
Have you looked into that?
Yeah, we've got the exact same system here. We operate under maritime law the majority of the time, and I know some of the bigger activists here. What's his name? Bill Turner, Billy T, as he's known. He's been remarkably successful on that front, exposing it. However, what I find very interesting about everybody who attempts to free themselves using the enemy's legal system is that every single one of them, without exception as far as I've found, is broke or in jail or constantly harassed by the police or homeless. So that's freedom. Really, you want to get free of the system? Be broke, homeless, in jail, or you see what I'm saying here? It's crazy, because I don't agree with the whole concept of using the system to get back at the system. My concept is that the system has already overgrown its usefulness, and we need to scrap it altogether. What these people are trying to do is individually get themselves loose from it, and I think that unless everybody's free, none of us are free. And the whole system needs to be brought down simultaneously. These people are breaching new ground. Like, did you hear about Dean Clifford's arrest? He was put in.
I did.
Yeah. So me and Max Egan talked about that on the show, and I've messaged Dean as little as yesterday, asking him to come on the radio show. I mean, just because I don't necessarily want to go that same route, it doesn't mean that these people aren't on to something, because in my experience, whenever the government discriminates against people in specificity, like if they're specifically discriminating against one man, that man has discovered a secret far more dangerous than they're willing to let out. And you've got to support those people, particularly in their time of need.
Yes, that's interesting you bring up Dean, because I have been on him for some time trying to get him to be a regular on the guest. I didn't know he had been arrested. And so he kept saying, well, yeah, I'd like to, but didn't know if he'd commit. And finally, I said, look, Dean, I'm going to quit chasing you around, because, I mean, if you don't want to commit, fine. And then I get this YouTube video with Menard coming out saying, well, he's been arrested and this and that. And I'm going, oh, okay, that's excusable then. So, Dean, sorry, you know, I just didn't know.
Dean's notoriously difficult to get on your radio show, even when he wants to come on the radio show. He told me one time that he flaked out, I think, not two times, but three times on going on Red Ice Radio with Heinrich Palmgren, because he's got so much on the go, and he doesn't have an assistant or anything like that. And, you know, I'm nowhere near at his level yet. I mean, I'm relatively insignificant in terms of the global truth movement and what have you. Even I'm starting to get a little overwhelmed with the amount of messages. Like, how many unanswered Skype messages? I've got 31 unanswered Skype messages as of this very minute. Maybe 14 unanswered Facebook messages, and these are the ones that I try to update regularly, and about 5,000 unanswered emails. Okay, and I'm nothing. So you really, really got to have a lot of patience and a lot of respect for these guys who do get big names and do a lot of things, because, well, basically they can't be everything to everyone. And, you just really got to have immense patience and understanding and respect for these guys and the work that they're doing, and understand that if they don't get back to you or whatever, it's not because they're specifically ignoring you. It's because they've got a mountain on their shoulders that they're trying to carry for all of us.
Right. Ben, you said something that's very, very important that I want to cap on here. And you were talking about this, we can call it the Patriot Movement, the free movement, the legal movement, whatever jargon people want to put to it. But it's interesting, you said that if all of us aren't free, none of us are free. And while I see and agree to an extent with what you're saying, that these people are trying to get themselves free and not as a lot, it is a stepping stone. Because I've looked into this is actually the genesis of this show, is getting into this legal maneuvering, whatever one wants to call it. And it is interesting because there have been movements to try to do it en masse. There's a few, I'm not going to get into a bunch of names, But I agree with you that that needs to be done en masse and getting people involved. And that's one of the things that I'm actually doing a little donations drive for, is trying to get, you know how you have like We Are Change and Sky Watch, and each one of the states has their own chapters and this type of thing. I'm putting a drive together to get 51 domain names. That's 50 for each, one for each state and one that's kind of a central one. And the hosting for a year to try to get this, to take our country back type thing. So that each state will have their own little thing. They can post us whatever it is they want to do and have loosely knit but yet communicating deals to try to get this. Because there's a lot of people out there in this particular community that a lot of them come out and they think they got the entire puzzle put together. And my experience is each one's got a piece of the puzzle, and we need to put all the pieces of puzzle on the table and put the puzzle together. And unless and until we do that, nothing's going to happen.
Yeah,
what do you think?
Let's remember the lesson of the founding fathers, that a lot of them hated each other, right? They didn't come together because they loved each other and they loved liberty and they wanted to free their country necessarily. They came together because they were oppressed and they really didn't want to pay taxes to a tyrant 3,000 miles away. Instead, they wanted to elect a system of government that would protect the rights and liberties of 99% of people, even if the 1% wanted to vote those rights away, and vice versa. They didn't want any intervention. They wanted to be free. And unfortunately, the lesson of history is, if you want to be free, if you want to have rights, you have to take them, usually by force. And that's what they had to do at the end of the day. And I feel strongly about gun ownership in this country and all others, that if you are going to start a movement that is going to be capable of succeeding without being shut down, like, I don't think peaceful movements are really the way to go, unless you're doing outreach programs or simple public awareness programs. You don't need somebody with guns backing you. However, if you're in doing what Dean Clifford is doing and doing what Rob Menard is doing, I think the things that are really difficult for them is that if the scum cops who are corrupt, who are evil, who are breaking the law in arresting them, do not have a gun pointed at their head, no amount of words or jargon or legal documents is going to stop them from doing what they want with you. So if there is going to be a resistance, if there is going to be a reinstitution of the Constitution itself, it has to be backed up with force. Not attack. I don't believe in attacking. I believe in defense and retaliation only. Never attack. You let them make the first move, and then you pull your gun out. Not before. You can tell them all the way, I'm going to start this revolution and whatever. You're just going to wind up getting yourself thrown in jail. What I would tell people is, look, I'm just trying to be peaceful here. I don't want to fight. But if you come to me and you're violating the law and you're using force to take my rights, take my children, take my property, I will kill you. There is no question. You are not a public servant. You are a corporate gang member, and you should be shot just like any other gang member who is coming across the threshold of somebody's house, because my house is my castle. Now, being in New Zealand, I can't get a gun, even if I wanted to. I have a criminal conviction for selling cannabis as a young man, and I don't know if that'll actually have really a bearing on me getting a gun and what have you, but they're prohibitively expensive anyway. It's like nearly a grand just for a basic weapon. And I saw this movie, I don't know if you've seen it, Rutger Hauer, Hobo with a Shotgun. And he goes into a thrift store and he picks up a shotgun for $55. I was like, unbelievable. It's really hard to get weaponry over here in New Zealand. And I think, I don't know really where I'm going with this, because ultimately there are this many problems, like 10,000 different problems, and I feel that the solution is not to actually cluster together in groups necessarily to attack the whole system. I think it's actually coming together as individuals who are collaborating to attack particular parts of the system independent of each other. Because if you're all tied in together, it means the head of the snake can be cut off, you know, like all your websites can be taken down, or your network can be taken off, or your radio shows can be taken off, or whatever. But if everybody's doing it independently of their own accord, and they ain't got no financial dependence on anything central, there's nothing that can take them all down at once. Nothing. Doesn't matter how much the doesn't matter how hard the government's going to be trying. And so, you know, I'm a big in favor of individualism over collectivism. I think that individuals who take it upon themselves to make things happen, not to ask, not to beg, not to grovel at the king's table for a few scraps, but to make it happen. When one man decides that enough is enough, usually that's all it takes in order for things to change. How many people out there have decided that enough is enough? How many people out there are actually trying to change things? And then have a look at how many things are actually changing.
Right. Well, this is interesting. Again, it ties in because with what I was just saying, and you brought up about the different countries, because my thought was here in the States, kind of locally, and I know G. Edward Griffin, who's going to be a guest on this show on the 4th, he has international outreach there, and I'm kind of thinking and hoping that if each of the countries do something similar to that, and then they get tied through an international type of link, and say, collectively, this is enough. This will not stand. You will cease and desist. Don't make us pick up a sword, period. That's a quote from Pastor Butch Paul. Don't make me use this. And he's holding a sword in his hand. I don't know if you know who Pastor Butch Paul is, but he's a very outspoken pastor, and he's at his wit's end with all this as well. So what do you think about that? Each country doing something like that, and then tying together like G. Edward has started with this, I forget now if it's Reality Zone, because he's got several of them, but I think you're familiar with him.
Yeah, well, I love Ed hugely. In fact, I named my kitten after him. I named my kitten Griffin. And I had Ed on my show on the 28th of January. You can go and listen to the archives at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. And I get an email every time that a new person in New Zealand signs up to Freedom Force International, and I contact all of these people, and I've got a list of them on my email list. Only one of them has ever responded, mate. Many people are willing to sign up for something and think that that's all that's required of them. Freedom is not free. It comes with the highest of costs, usually the cost of blood. And unless people are willing to say, look, I'm willing to die in order to be free, because I would rather be dying on my feet than begging on my knees to a tyrant. And I think that what Ed's idea is to foster individualism. The problem being, individuals are very difficult to foster. In this country, my friend Baron, he's going to go stand for one of the major political parties here. And I met him through Freedom Force International. He's the only person who's ever actually contacted me back or done anything for me or come out and met with me or came to my birthday party or had dinner with me or anything like that. He's the only one. Out of all of those other people, out of all these dozens and dozens of emails that I've had notifications of people that have joined Freedom Force International Fair. And you know, in my experience, one person's all it frickin' takes, you know? One person who will not bow, who takes it right into the teeth of the enemy, who is prepared to do one thing every day that scares the hell out of them. That's the person that makes the difference. Not an organization. Not a PR person. No, I've got this expression that the masses don't matter. And statistically, historically, they've never mattered. Never. No country has ever instituted a revolution that's actually wound up being positive for the country with any more than 3, 4, 5% of the population contributing.
None. Bingo. That is exactly true. Now Vinny, I don't know how old you are, but you're obviously a pretty young man, but you have brought up the notion of individualism versus collectivism. And I would like for you to briefly describe both to the listening audience and then to tell us the changes you have seen in your own life, short-lived as it may be, between this individualism and collectivism.
Okay. Well, individualism is the belief that you empower a person with responsibility, and then you will have a responsible society. Collectivism believes that if you take away people's responsibilities, that you have a safer society. And it's the opposite. So basically, if you empower individuals with the ability to be responsible for themselves, you wind up with a society where people know how to protect themselves, know how to spot liars, know how to overthrow oppressive governments and things of that nature, because they understand that it is their responsibility to protect themselves. And then have you ever seen the movie 10,000 BC? There's a great speech in it. Say a man draws a circle around himself. And for some men, the circle is very small, and he's the only person inside that circle. For others, maybe family men, that circle would expand and would include his wife and his children. But some men have a greater destiny, and their circle expands to include many, many more. And the concept of individualism is every man having a very wide circle like that, not only taking responsibility for themselves and their families, but responsibility for everything that they see in their society. They see somebody breaking into a car, they pull out their concealed carry and they point a gun at this person and they say, get down on the ground, and then they call the police on their cell phone, and the police come down and they arrest this person for attempted grand theft auto. Okay, that's a society with people who are individually responsible at all times. In a society where nobody's individually responsible at all times, hey, it's like you could walk past a dead man on the street. Dead. Just lying there. And for 90 minutes, people will walk past and do nothing. And this actually happened in New York. A man tried to
step right over him and sneer about it. Yep.
And some people even took pictures of him with their iPhones, with the blood and everything. See? You see what happens when you take away people's individual responsibility? Do you see what happens when you make them stop caring about other people and stop being responsible for their own actions? You have a slovenly, horrific, debauched society with no education, no incentive to create or trade on their own accord, a society of willing, obedient, arrogant, ignorant, facile, slave, scum. That is individualism versus collectivism, in a nutshell, for me at least.
Right. Now, the last part of that is, because you are a young man, you're considerably younger than I, in a different country, I'd be real curious to know how you have seen in your lifetime, in your country, change, because I have pretty fond memories when I was a child, when we had problems, but there was at least people looked at one another in the street when they passed each other, said, hello, not this, what you were just describing with this collective zombie mindset. What have you seen in your country in your lifetime that has changed in that, and how have you seen it change that way?
You know, I haven't been around for long. I didn't remember speed cameras when I was a kid. I didn't remember checkpoints. I didn't remember police wearing riot gear. But there were police in riot gear. We had big riots during the 80s when I was born. In fact, I was incidentally born in 1984. How prophetic is that? I hadn't seen drug testing. I hadn't seen forced vaccination programs. I hadn't seen government passing legislation and having huge quantities of people in the streets and that government just doing it anyway. I haven't seen forced amalgamations of local councils. I hadn't seen a lot of things. State media, I mean, just basically, you name it, it's changed. But isn't that what happens for everything in every society? Nothing stays the same. Nothing stays the same. The problem is, things sometimes get better. And the unfortunate thing is, nothing's gotten better. Everything's gotten worse. People are poorer. I remember when I used to be able to afford to fill up my car with gas and go on a holiday. I remember my family was able to afford a beach house. I remember that Coke and candy bars and things like that were incredibly cheap. I remember people were capable of buying houses and paying them off within only a few years. None of that is in existence anymore.
And this is only in about 25 years, if we figure you started remembering things really kind of at 5 or something.
Maybe just in terms of 20 years?
Yeah. Well, see, it's interesting you said that societies don't stay the same, they change. Now, most people have a resistance to change. That's fine, I get it. I'm probably more than most. But I could live with change. But this isn't just change that happens to happen. This is a directed change. It's being directed by the same people in the same direction all over the globe.
It's called social engineering. It's been going on since the days of Bernays and probably before then. Once people figured out through the discoveries of advertising and marketing and things like that, that you could make people want something that they don't need. You could make people need something that they don't want. That is when society took a radically different direction. And what's interesting about that concept is that disproportionately small quantities of people have an enormous influence on the quote-unquote masses. And this is why I've said the masses don't matter, because they never actually change anything themselves. They're the ones who are changed by the small minority. Okay, so it's whether or not that small minority is acting like a shepherd, leading them into a slaughterhouse, or a shepherd leading them onto greener pastures. That's the only difference, really. The masses are simply inconsequential.
Okay,
this is why I don't like the idea of collectivism, and this is why I don't like groups. I don't join groups anymore. Okay, I was very tempted to join Occupy New Zealand. I went down there. I helped out a little bit and did more videos for them than they did for themselves. By myself. They had a media team of 9 people, and I created more videos for them and got more hits for them than their entire media team did collectively, okay? Because I don't frack around. I don't wait for other people's approval. I don't need permission to do the right thing. I don't need to wait for the opportunity.
Now, you mentioned Edward Bernays. For those in the audience that may not have heard that name or be familiar with it, why don't you give it a brief rundown on who he is?
Edward Bernays is the nephew of Sigmund Freud, okay? And he is the father of the term public relations. He is the father of American propaganda. He is the father, through the Rockefellers and all of these other wealthy business things, of modern marketing, essentially. You look at anything pre-1900s in terms of advertisements. Let's say you're advertising a chest of drawers. It'll say the dimensions of the chest of drawers. It'll say the depth. It'll say the height. It'll say the quality of the materials that are used. It will say the given lifespan of that particular thing. Technical aspects. After Bernays's advertising campaigns came in, it was shifted from technical use to perceived need. So instead of showing you all of these measurements of what the product they're actually buying in, what they would do is they would play emotional association. So they would see somebody with this chest of drawers who is very happy and just feeling great, you know, like those old commercials from the 50s where somebody would get in this big car and they'd have this big, beaming, cheesy smile on their face kind of thing. That was Bernaysian influence. And suddenly, everybody was no longer buying things because they needed them. They were buying things because they were influenced into thinking that they needed them, into thinking that they would be happy like the people in those commercials looked happy. that I cannot be happy without this car. And as soon as you get that car, you realize, hey, I'm not actually really that happy. And then you see another advertisement for another bigger, better car. And you think, surely I'll go and buy that one. That'll make me happier. And it won't. And nothing you buy will ever, ever truly make you happy. Bernays was the one who figured out how to create cyclical consumption through people's continued misery at being disappointed at purchasing consistently the things that make them unhappy.
Right. Vanity, vanity, all is vanity, saith the preacher. Now this is the man. This is why we see the little girl with toenail fungus for a big pharma company running through a field of daisies on a nice sunny day. This is the man that got women smoking to tell their husbands to go shimmy up a rope, kiss off, whatever, and got us eating bacon for breakfast that was not really done before because of what you just got into.
Mm-hmm. Bacon and eggs. Bernays. All right.
And so this has had a drastic effect on how we do, and they have, on top of that, they have perpetuated these big advertising businesses. They turn around and have retained psychiatrists and psychologists on their staff to know exactly what it is that captivates people with blink rates, so they'll sit there and stare in this mesmerized state, and this has a dumbing down effect. I've turned around a movie and looked at people. Their face is gray. It's flush, and they are fixated like they're asleep with their eyes open.
Mm-hmm. There's a good documentary that really does go into all of this called The Century of Self. I highly recommend people watch that documentary. And watching documentaries is actually how I really woke up. I think I watched like 160-something documentaries in about 6 months. I got a radically, what you would say, a geometric growth in knowledge very, very quickly. And as a result of the intake of such knowledge so quickly, such bad, really home truths, I got really depressed and I couldn't do my job without being high as a kite, you know, getting stoned every morning, and I'm off it now, and I had to quit my job. My boss was a psychopath, and I developed what I've termed employer phobia, a fear of being employed, where every time I almost get employed, I start to have panic attacks. I cannot be employed by ever again, I don't believe, because every time I'm in that situation where I'll have to be working, doing something I don't believe in, for people I don't care, who I know don't really care about me, or doing anything of that nature, my body rejects it. Like I'm having a vaccine reaction or something like that. I am no longer capable of accepting any form of tyranny of any kind. I cannot work for people, but I'm more than willing to work with people. And I can assure you, I'm one of the hardest working people in this movement, whatever movement it is. It's not because I'm refusing to get jobs because I can't work. I mean, every single job that I have, I wound up being their best frickin' employee because I really believe in hard work. But now I'm working for humanity. Now I'm working for the greater good. Now I'm working for myself in service to others, which I do willingly. I feel that there is no choice, that whatever human being I may have turned into had this knowledge not been imparted to me by so many documentary filmmakers, I'd be a radically different person. I'd probably still be the number one sales person that I was, probably living in a hell of a lot nicer place, driving a much, much better car that I didn't inherit from my grandmother 10 years ago. There's a rust bucket and covered in protest stickers and things of that nature. I would not be the same person. And was I given the choice between helping humanity or helping myself to what humanity had to offer? I'd still be helping humanity because I would not be able to live with myself otherwise.
Well, Vinny, that's very, very interesting, because with the exception of the sales and a few minor details. What you just described is exactly what I went through, how I feel, what I have experienced. Now you touch on some other, you talked about your learning curve growing exponentially, geometrically, and this type of thing. And it's interesting because I only see a division of people so clearly. There are those people, and we get into terms like cognitive dissonance, incredulousness, and where I want to go with this, there's people that seem to have an aversion to the truth. They are run by their feelings and their emotions, and it's like they expect truth or facts to bend around their feelings and emotions rather than realizing the truth is the truth, and it's not changing, it's not going anywhere. Therefore, you'll just have to deal with whatever your feelings are around that. What are you seeing there on that issue? What are your thoughts on that?
Have you had Bob Melamed on your show? And if you don't, I recommend you do. He's a colleague of Rick Simpson, you know, Phoenix Tears, the guy curing people's cancer with hemp oil. I'm sure you heard of him.
I don't know. Bob who?
Melamed. Melamed.
I will try to find Bob. Okay, go ahead.
Well, hold on. There was another person you wanted me to get for you. Was it Dean Clifford or somebody else?
Dean Clifford, I have. I know I've been trying to get John Rappaport on, but I don't believe that I had meant that.
I don't know who he is.
Okay.
But there was somebody else earlier in the show that you wanted me to find for
Dr. Paul Connett.
Paul Connett. Okay, yeah. Okay, yeah. Well, I'm seeing him on Friday, so I'm just listing down things here because this is another part of what I do is if you're going to collaborate with people, networking is not about trying to find and meet new people by yourself only. It's actually also about hooking up other people of like mind so that they can do great things together without me. Okay, that's what networking is really supposed to be about. Unfortunately, a lot of people are really competitive. I'm sorry, I forgot the question you asked me.
Well, where I really was going is, I'm sure when you were watching all these videos, these documentaries and whatnot, you didn't enjoy everything you watched, but you realized it was true, and yet you've got the vast majority of people, they won't even look at it because it's almost like they know if they watch it, they're going to have to realize it's true, and they can't get rid of it, and they don't like it because it doesn't make them feel good. It's this incredulousness, this aversion to truth, this cognitive dissonance.
Yeah, it's just the slave mentality. What Bob Melamed, here we go, that was the reason I was bringing up his name. What Bob Melamed and another guy named Victor H. Fisher, have you heard of him?
No.
Okay, well, I'll introduce you to him as well. There we go. So we've got Bob Melamed, Paul Connett, Victor H. Fisher. Okay, what Bob Melamed says is that there's a battle right now between mentalities. He calls it the battle between blips and flips, backward-looking people and forward-looking people. Victor H. Fisher calls it prospective people and retrospective people. Now, let me explain. Backward-looking people or retrospective people are people who are driving a car only looking in the rearview mirror. Only what they've already done is the only thing that is really in their line sight of vision. So they have no idea where they're going, what they're doing at all, at any time. And they believe that keeping things the same with what they're familiar with is actually healthy. Prospective people are the people who've got their eyes wide open and they're looking in the rearview mirror, they're looking in the side mirrors, they're looking at the speedometer, they're seeing things coming right at them in front of them and all over the place. These are the creative people. These are the people that actually make a difference in society, and the blips are the people who are holding them all back. And the blips are in control right now. And the vast majority of the population are blips on the radar, as it were. And what we've got to figure out, and I think Anthony Robbins, or Tony Robbins, I think he's known as, my friend told me this, I'm not sure if the quote's real, but he said that humanity is faced with a crisis of faith, not in God, not in Jesus, not in Allah. They are suffering from a crisis of faith in themselves. To be afraid to hear something scary means that you do not have enough faith in yourself to survive or thrive despite being infected with that new knowledge. And I think that's what people are really, really afraid of. they're afraid that they've lived their entire lives doing stuff that doesn't matter. And to realize this is a very harsh thing. It was harsh for all of us, but eventually we put up with it. And there is a significant portion of influencing factors that need to happen to you. In my experience, most activists, people who devote themselves to the service of humanity to the detriment of their wallet, to the detriment of their social life, to the detriment of their relationships, these people who lose it all, essentially, they are typically coming from two places. Either one place where they were born into a family where the father and mother had career prospects and a mentality relative to what's going on. So let's say you were born to a psychologist who was always bashing psychiatry because it's not a real science and they keep drugging everybody and they don't do any counseling and he's really questioning that side of things. And your mother is, say, a state senator who is exposing corruption within the Senate and things of that nature. So the child growing up in that environment, he will tack on to these abilities from either parent. Me, my father was a genius and a real asshole. And my mother was slightly clairvoyant and a nurse. So naturally, I become a very forward-thinking, genius-level asshole. And I use the fact that I have these traits, not as something to hold me back, but as something to actually push me forward so that I honor my parents and where they came from and try to improve on it. Now, the second type of people, and this also applies to me to a large degree, is trauma. If you're real talented and real skilled and you get real high up and you then realize what you've gotten yourself into and you have a great fall and you lose everything, that is a moment when you are given the choice to run away forever with your tail between your legs or to stand up until your dying day and fight back. That's the real thing that we've got going on here in humanity, I feel.
Yeah, this gets into this, and it amazes me. We keep coming back, in my mind's eye, to the same thing where we can call it different types of names. We have this progressive liberal here. I mean, there's people that buy into this gimme, 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 and know nothing and don't want to know anything about self-sufficiency, self-reliance or responsibility, and they can never be free, but they think as long as they get their Obama phone, and I got kind of hollered at because that was going on for Obama. The point is, that was the phrase that was coined, their Obama phone. They cannot be free because they don't know what it is to go get their own damn phone without having it free, quote unquote, which is never free because it comes out of somebody's pocket.
That's right. And there ain't nothing free in this world. Bill Cosby once said that I don't like people who have a sense of entitlement. Either people who are born into a wealthy family who feel that they're entitled to their inheritance and never wind up looking care of themselves. Like my mate Frederick, he lived in, forget where he lived, but anyway, it's a very, very rich kind of seaside mansion sort of thing. You know the typical Jekyll Island type place where the rich and wealthy come to play on their holidays and that kind of thing. And
right.
Yeah, he used to hang out with and party with these young kids who had that sense of entitlement, who could wants to come and have a play with them. You know, just. I don't know, like racing dirt bikes or whatever, you know. All the local kids, they got their own dirt bikes and they're pretty crappy or whatever. This kid waltzes right in, buys himself a brand new top of the line thing with all the beautiful padding and the helmets and all of that kind of stuff, just straight on daddy's credit card. Boom, never had to earn a single thing. And what Freda noticed about these people as he was drinking their liquor and smoking their weed and doing all of this kind of things with them on their dollar, which they never really earned themselves and never had any really responsibility to do, is that they couldn't take care of themselves at all. They barely even tie their own frickin' shoelaces. Can't cook toast. Can't drive a car because their first car was a limousine with a driver. That kind of thing. That is what happens to you when you're dependent, right? That's what happens to you when you're dependent with a sense of entitlement. And you flip it over and you go to the other side. People with no money growing up with a sense of entitlement. That they're entitled to the money of people who earned it really hard. How much personal responsibility do you think they're going to wind up having? How much ability to take care of yourself do you think they're going to have? The answer is very little. And the people in this society who have a sense of entitlement are not entitled to anything. And because they are basing their lives on a lie, they become utterly dependent on anything that gives them a semblance of what they think they're entitled to. Whereas people like myself, people like yourself, perhaps, know that you have to work harder than you would ever think you would have to in order to get something that you think is of value.
So you are seeing the same collectivist, socialist, communistic movement thrust in your country then that it sounds like we are seeing here, and indeed virtually all over the world.
Yep, we're totally socialist in this country. Absolutely. I mean, we've got socialized healthcare, with medicine and all of that kind of stuff. You know, we've already got our Obamacare, and it's the leading cause of death in New Zealand, our healthcare system. See, that's what happens when you're dependent. Is you stop questioning, and before you know it, you're paying 35-40% of your frickin' income to be killed. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that ironic? And you know what you do when you realize that you're being killed? You go out and you ask the people who you're dependent on in the first place who were purposely killing you to stop killing you and to start taking care of you. Well, the only reason they're able to kill you in the first place is because you asked them to take care of you in the first place. And you stop taking care of yourself. You stop questioning the doctors. You stop learning how to take care of your own health. Stop learning how to frickin' cook. There are children in South Auckland in this country who haven't seen a knife and fork before. Because they've never eaten a thing in their life that didn't come out of a packet.
Right. Sorry, I was writing a note for the next subject. I know where I want to go with this, but I don't want to bring this out now. We've mentioned about all these different movements, this dumbing down, the collectivization. All these different things. And one thing that I want to get into is we hear, well, they're doing this and they're doing that. And what I'd really like to know in your studies, who are the they that are doing these things?
Who are the they? Well,
yeah.
It depends how deep you want the rabbit hole to go on that one. You can point to
you can take us.
Yeah, well, let's see. There's a couple levels to it. Okay, let me see if I can make some notes so I don't get taken out. So there's the individuals, there's behavior, and there's entities. Right, so who's the they? Let's talk about individuals for a second. You've heard of Zbigniew Brzezinski? Mentor to Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, writer of The Grand Chessboard, where he sets out a plan for world domination of the United States. He's one of those individuals. You heard of Henry Kissinger, who was the war minister or whatever for Nixon way back in the day, and is the Kissinger and Associates and what have you, the biggest big badass law firm, and they're always the ones who wind up coming in to cover up things and to advise foreign governments of how to better run their countries, namely better running their country into the ground like he did to the Arab states when he said buy gold, buy gold, buy gold in the 70s when it was like a couple of bucks an ounce and when it was relatively expensive, and then they crashed the stock market during that oil price shock. And so all of these Arab states, whose basically their main income was from oil and what have you, suddenly had to sell off all their gold for pennies on the dollar and completely decapitated all their country's wealth. That's Henry Kissinger. He's another individual that you can point to. Have you ever heard of Lord Amshel Rothschild, who in the Battle of Waterloo, where the French were defeated by the British, had an agent ride back to London and get there a full 24 hours with the news that the British had won the battle, and he went to the central stock marketplace and tipped his hat forward, signifying that he was selling stock. In a time of war, when a man starts selling his stock, and he has been renowned to have an enormous intelligence network, everybody else panicked because they thought that the British had lost the battle. So they started selling all of their stock. And the British stock market had an overnight collapse, and it all devalued. And he bought it all up the very next day for pennies on the dollar. And he owned Europe from then on, because England was the undisputed ruler of Europe, and he owned England. So here's one. And all of his family descendants, Rothschild scum of all denominations and what have you, this is where they come from. They come from thievery. They come from what I've come to term as scumbaggery, where they embody the actions, portents, behaviours, and mannerisms of a scumbag, and there is no real end to it. The Rockefeller family is one other such family here. As I mentioned earlier, the Rockefeller Primarch, Big Bill Rockefeller, who was a traveling snake oil salesman who franchised snake oil so that he would scam large areas all at once, wound up putting all of that money that he really stole from the Old West into oil, and then started proceeding to wipe out competition. He said that, John D. Rockefeller said that competition is a sin. And today, the Primarch of, he's not the Primarch, but he's certainly the head honcho kingpin of the Rockefeller family, is a man named David Rockefeller, who in his own memoirs said that if there are people out there who accuse me of being part of a criminal cabal to destroy the United States and bring about a one-world government under the supranational rule of bankers, or paraphrasing here, of course, and he said, if that's the charge, then I am guilty and proud of it. Okay? These people admit what they're doing, and they think they're doing the right thing. Their mentality is about thinking that they're better than us. Elitism, in other words. I know that I'm smarter than a lot of people. I know that I'm taller than a lot of people. I know that I'm stronger. I know that I'm a better speaker. I know that I'm more creative than a lot of people. However, I don't care how much better than other people I am at something. I only like to associate with people that are better than me at something. Right, because I don't want to be the most powerful person in the room. I don't want to be head honcho who knows everything, who everybody's dependent on. I don't want that. I want to be around people that are better than me at something so I can learn something, so I can improve myself, so I can become a better man. These people are not of that mentality. They're not of that mentality whatsoever. There's a number of other families, the Warburgs, DuPont, there's a number, there's quite a number. Now, organizationally, you can point to a number of different organizations that hold the purse strings or do implement global tyranny and things of that nature. For example, one that's popular here in New Zealand is called, other than the Freemasons, of course, what is it called? The Council for International Politicians. I've forgotten the name. Anyway, there are two requirements for this organization, and they have meetings at the Ritz-Carlton in Washington, D.C., or the Hilton in New Delhi, and really posh hotels and things like that all over the world. And in order to get into this organization, you have to be an elected representative of a recognized democratic country, and you have to pay by credit card. All right, that's the only two requirements. Then I had a look at the list of all these courses and everything that they're going to, and I was like looking at these agendas. So, Agenda 21, Agenda 21, Agenda 21, Codex Alimentarius, gun bans for everybody, how to enslave your population. Okay, so you've got an organization there that really is teaching the best and brightest and the people who are the leaders of our countries. Is what's called grooming. Because once they figure out that there's something wrong and they choose to not go along with it, they get booted out of those organizations. You wind up getting demonized in the media or thrown out of your government or parliament or something for some reason. There was a parliamentarian here named Winston Peters, who everybody thinks is a racist. And everybody thinks is a crazy person, who everybody thinks that the only people who support him are old people, people who are decrepit, who have no idea what the heck is going on, who only got two teeth in their head and whatnot. I have heard so many politicians from every stripe in this country over my time as an activist speak, unbroken in their speeches. And only one man that I have listened to actually made any sense, and it was Winston Peters. And I suddenly realized why he was demonized so much. I suddenly realised why when myself and my friend Penny Bright went to the archives of the New Zealand Herald and took a picture of every single political related article in the 2008 election, that almost in every single paper, every single day, there was an article demonising Winston Peters with complete lies, complete slander, and the media has never been pulled up on it. They take you the frack out if you don't play ball. You are a good person, you ain't getting to the top. It's just that simple. They've got the whole system stitched up, a whole nexus of entities, individuals, and organizations that are there specifically to coerce people's conformity within leadership positions to have only one motivation, to enslave and to rule. That's the real who we're talking about. Now, the other side of it is behavioural patterns, namely psychopathy. And there's also branches into entities, because I've had I had an Irish guy who wrote, Puzzling People, The Labyrinth of the Psychopath. And he talked about how psychopathic behaviour is permeated by a number of things. No conscience or consequences for their actions can be visible to these people. They have no idea what they are. No love. No real hate per se. Simply a mode of self-indulgence. Now, this same mentality, which we call psychopathy today, was once called demon possession. And there is a theory out there, and I've looked into it a little bit, and it's starting to make a bit more sense to me, but I'm still not 100% sure because I haven't seen the source materials in order to confirm the my suspicions. And it's what David Icke and others like Jay Widener have called archons, which Gnostics apparently back in the mid 1,000-odd years ago or something, apparently some scrolls or whatever have been dug up, and they're talking about these entities and how they've got no creativity, no empathy, no concern for the good of mankind, and only want to impose hierarchy and control over everything. Now, the American Medical Journal stated in a release in 2002, I think, that psychopaths are known by a number of traits, just in general. You know, these people, when you meet them, this is how they act. They're generally very smiley, happy-looking people. And they're often quite enchanting because they're capable of reading you and figuring out what it is you want, what are your desires, and reflecting those desires back at you so that you will become entranced and enticed by them. Essentially, they create another reality for you. And they stated that they don't have long-lasting relationships outside of some mischievous pretext, such as a business relationship or something of that nature. They don't really have any real human relationships. They may have families, they may have wives and things like that, but they have attachments to them. Not necessarily emotional attachments, it's more like a rage attachment. Like if somebody were to kill my girlfriend Sarah, for example, I would be incredibly enraged and I would want to hurt that person that did that to her. However, that's not the only thing I have for her. I have love and common decency and mutual partnership aspects of that nature. And we work together as a cohesive unit. Psychopaths, on the other hand, they really only have that rage attachment, where if you mess with one of my people, I'm going to kill you, I'm going to destroy you. And they're overreactionary. So they'll take a small conflict and they'll turn it into a war. They'll take an argument and they'll turn it into a fight, you know, this kind of thing. And their lack of creativity means that they're prone to stealing people's ideas. So they'll milk you for your ideas, and then they'll distort it, manipulate it, and put it into something that they want instead. They can't come up with anything on their own, but you give them a few ideas, they can manipulate it, they can turn it upside down, they can distort it into whatever they really want. Okay? So that's that kind of the mentality. And in the American Medical Journal, it stated that, again, that the three most likely places you are to find these type of people are in business, politics, and entertainment. What would you say are the three most influential industries on human behavior and the development of human society? Is it any wonder that everything that's happening appears as though a crazy person's running the show? It's because they are, you know? And just to call them psychopaths, I think, is enough. People go on to say that they're possessed by these entities and things like that. I don't know yet. I'm certainly open to the possibility, but I don't know. What I do know is that these people are psychopathic, and that they do not have concern for humankind, and that they are fracking crazy, that they will throw the baby out with the bathwater, that they will destroy this world and themselves if left unchecked. It is us with a conscience. It is us with the desire to defend our liberties, to protect our friends and our families, that are the only thing that stand in their way. And to abdicate that personal responsibility aspect is very, very dangerous indeed. And I will never, ever turn to the dark side, you know, like Luke Skywalker said. Never.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to hear that. Now, along those lines of whodunit here, I want to mention three cities that are really...
Vatican, countries. London, and Washington, D.C., right? The Trilateral
you
Commission?
You got it.
Yep. So these are the ones... basically, there are three systems of power. Like I talked about, entertainment, business, and politics. The other three ways of controlling people in terms of a mechanism are ecclesiasty, which is controlled by the Vatican. So they are the form of ecclesiastical power. They got all these dupes and people that believe every word they say and continue to allow children to be raped by the thousands, if not millions, every single fracking day and exterminated all over the place, as I've had whistleblowers and things come on my show and talk about. Finance, which is controlled in the City of London, which is the home of the Rothschild family fortune. So that means, well, basically, if you need money for anything, and trust me, everybody needs money for everything these days, if they don't want it, they can shut it off, you know, shut off the supply. IMF, World Bank mofos, you know. And lastly, the last mechanism of power to control people is the military, which is based in Washington, D.C. So there you go. You've got the Trilateral Commission, which is chaired by David Rockefeller, as I mentioned earlier, and partnered with Henry Kissinger, which I mentioned earlier, and a member of which is Zbigniew Brzezinski, who I mentioned earlier. And the Trilateral Commission controls these three cities and what they do. And they work as a collective. And they are the only three city-states in the world that are not actually part of the countries in which they reside. Even the Queen herself cannot go into London without the okay from the Lord Mayor of London. Washington, D.C., I'm not 100% sure exactly how independent that city-state is, but it's certainly not held accountable. And anybody who's living in the United States and sees what the U.S. government and particularly the U.S. military is doing to things all over the world, if there was any accountability, I don't see it. And the Vatican itself, completely independent from Italy, entirely. They've got their own police, their own taxes systems, basically no banking system. They've got their own banking system and all of that kind of stuff. So basically, they're just sitting on the top, like, what was it? I'm the king of the castle, and you're the dirty rascal.
Well, we seem to have almost come full circle with some of the same names cropping up again. And so we know who's doing it. We know where they reside. And yet this persists. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to you for any thing that we did not get into you would like to cover, any loose ends or anything like that that you'd like to add in.
Well, you know, to be honest, I don't know what I can really slot in here. We've kind of covered a broad base of topics. I guess I can really tell people about what it takes to get into a position like mine or like yours or like David Icke's, and generally you have to tell everybody else F you. Basically, I've had innumerable people tell me that I'll never be successful at what I'm doing, that I'm not going to amount to anything, that it's impossible, that it can't happen. These people are either very successful people who've made it in the system for all the warts and all, and think that nobody else can make it to any position of reasonable respect in society except through that particular mechanism for which they are rich themselves, usually through ripping off other people and having no conscience about it. And the others are the kinds of people who are unsuccessful at anything and simply don't want you to be successful at anything either, especially if you're original, especially if you give a frack, because they don't give a frack. They're unoriginal. You know, why would they want anybody to put them to shame? So I'd always wanted to figure out a mechanism for activating individuals. I don't 99% of the people listening to this broadcast right now will listen and just go, yeah, and never do a thing. Never do a damn thing. I don't want to insult any of the listeners here. I respect each and every one of you because you've come at least this far. But if you're still listening to information and you already know and are familiar with a lot of these things that are being said right here, you've come this far, but you have not come far enough. And many people ask, what can I do, or can I do anything? And the answer is, do anything, and you can do anything. It's just whether or not you're willing to get out of your own way, whether or not you're willing to tell all those people who would poo-poo you and tell you not to do the right thing because it's not safe enough, or you need to have a job of some description, or you need financial security. Synchronicity is a very interesting thing. Every single time when I've been broke as a mofo, when I needed a certain amount of cash by a certain time, through some miracle, every single time, right on time, that cash has turned up. Sometimes I'll be sitting here after my show and I'll be thinking, man, I'm so freaking hungry. I wish somebody would just bring me a pie. Then suddenly, there's a knock on the door. Hey, Vinny, bro, I've brought you a pie. It happens every day for me. Something like that, where people will call me at a particular time that I needed them to call me. People will give me something at a particular time that I needed them to give me something. People don't normally experience that kind of thing like I do, because they have denied what is best in themselves. When I got to speak at the David Icke conference when he came here a couple of years back, I wanted to say something to him, but I didn't know what it was. I didn't know what I wanted to tell him. And of course, after it was too late, I figured it out. I said, David, you know, the reason why people enjoy your presentations and like you and admire you so much, because you help them to see what is best in themselves. And that's ultimately the best anybody can do for anybody else, is just help them to see the best in themselves, help them to see the good. Because it's the little good things that you do every single day that actually, at the end of the day, keep the evil at bay. And my mentality is that the reason why I seem to have this sort of mystical attraction that makes everything so easy for me is because I do things not because I have to, but because I believe that they are the right thing to do. I've never in my life been appreciated for the things that I do. I've always been attacked and teased at school and had stuff made up about me and been suspended for no reason. I got suspended 17 times when I was in high school. I was a really violent kid up until the age of 15 when I tore a chunk of one of my best friend's hair out. And then I went to the school office, you know, the assistant principal, and I put the chunk of hair down on his desk and I said, I need you to suspend me. And I never laid a finger on anybody since. And I think that all of these experiences, the suppression that I felt, you know, growing up without a father for a decent chunk of my life, the betrayal and the trauma that I found, and being arrested at a young age for selling pot and things like that, and having the cops make up stuff, even though I gave them a full confession, still producing false evidence in the courts, not advising me of my rights. A lot of these things are just words, just concepts to people. I felt it. And I felt it so painfully. There were times when I was trying to get up a flight of stairs to get back to my flat, and my legs gave out on me because I was so traumatized by these things that had happened to me that I couldn't walk, and I called out to Jesus or God or anything, and it got me up those stairs. You got to have faith in something, anything, outside of yourself. Faith in yourself, faith in other people, faith in a higher power will get you through situations where ordinary people will not survive. And it's a very, very encouraging thought to know that all you got to do is have a little faith that things will get through. My grandfather had a saying, it'll all be all right in the end. And my sister once asked him, but Granddad, what if it's not? He says, it's not the end. When things are really bad for you, when you have lost your job, when you have lamented the loss of your rights of your country, when your children have been kidnapped by Child Protective Services for no reason, that is when you will be tested. That is when you will grow as a person. And those are actually the best experiences of your life. You should feel privileged to be traumatized. You should feel honored to be discriminated against. You should wish for discomfort. Because without those things, you really haven't overcome anything in your life. And unless you know how to overcome bad things, you will never be able to overthrow bad people and bad institutions. Because you will never understand the difference. You'll never know what it's like unless you've been through it. It's all very well to have a lot of empathy for other people and to hear their stories and to cry and feel very horrible. But it's only once you actually do something about it that I feel that you've really earned your humanity. You know, as they say in the military, earned your stripes. You've got to go through the boot camp. A lot of people go out there and they try and wake people up. I don't believe it. It's frickin' possible. Wake people up. Who forced me to watch 160 documentaries in 6 months? Nobody. I woke my frickin' self up. There were a couple of experiences that I had in my life which I pointed to, maybe one of my elder mentors when I was still a teenager telling me that 9/11 might be an inside job back in 2002. And another friend who showed me back in 2004 a documentary by Michael Rupert from thewilderness.com called The Truth and Lies of 9/11. I remember him, that same guy, also introducing me to the comedian Bill Hicks, who talked about a whole bunch of range of conspiracies and things like that.
Whoa. Michael Rupert, do you know him? I have been trying to get a hold of that man. I can find nothing on him.
Yep. I got that same problem. I actually had one of his assistants on yesterday who gave me his email address, which I'll give for you. He hasn't responded as yet, but
some of the comments you made are very, very insightful and brought up a few things I wasn't planning on getting into, but you had mentioned earlier about getting your needs met at exact timing, and I too have experienced that, and it's kind of freaky. And then you mentioned about the listeners, and they've come this far, but most of them won't do anything. And it's interesting because I've noticed that people will regurgitate this information like it's a little factoid. I mean, and you mentioned Gnostics before. It's almost like it's become a Gnosticism. Alex Jones and his InfoWars. It's almost like if we just learn enough information, we don't have to do anything. If we learn enough information, this will all go away or take care of itself somehow. And the last thing that I want to bring up is you had mentioned about telling people to FO and because, you know, get a real job and this. And it's interesting because I found out, much it sounds like you did, that when you step out of the system, so to speak, these people resent it. It's like you're doing something that's somehow foreign or evil or weird or goofy. I don't know, but I've experienced the same thing from friends and family. It's like you're out to lunch. It's like, no, I'm having my lunch. You're the one that's eating a turd sandwich. Give me a break here.
Yeah.
Thoughts, comments on that?
Yeah. They're slaves. Right? Slaves are ooh. Mate. I can't tell you how many times I've been at a protest, leading the frickin' protest, and you have people drive past and tell me to go get a job. Excuse me, mate. I'm Vinnie frickin' Eastwood. I'm probably the most highest-ranking conspiracy theorist, researcher, talk radio show host in the country. I am known throughout the world. I have ambushed the Prime Minister and asked him questions about the UN. And the former Prime Minister, Helen Clark, who is now at the UN, about their plan for world government. We have talked with finance ministers. We have talked with the heads of major political parties. We have stood on the pulpits of humanity and screamed into the wind, no more. And these people think that they can convince me to go get a slave job because they love their servitude. That they think they can convince me by driving past once and yelling out the window of the worthiness of their servitude over mine to the greater good and to humanity, to stare psychopaths in their dead eyes and tell them to go frack themselves. These people have nothing. They have nothing that I want.
That is very interesting, too, and I normally would not put this on the air, but because you shared, I'm going to share, too. I had zero idea of how much time goes involved in a radio show like this and an associated website. Now, folks, I'm going to tell you something, and I'm not bragging. It's just a simple statement of fact. It was my idiocy. I opened up a sole proprietorship and a corporation at one time. At the same time, don't ever do it. You're a lunatic if you do. Nonetheless, possibly for a brief period of time, I worked as hard or harder as I am right now. But for an ongoing time, I have never put in my waking life. This is my life. So go frack yourself with this. Go get a real job. this is a real job. They don't pay worth a damn. I don't have quite the support, and it sounds like you do, and that's why I'm not whining. I'm just saying this is a real job, and this is a job that needs to be done, and I couldn't quit this job if I wanted to, because believe me, I had already put out notices that I was going off air because I didn't think I could even keep the lights on. So what you said. Now, that being said, unless you have a comment on that, I'd like for you to go ahead and plug your show, your site, organizations, anything that you'd like, books, DVDs, videos, whatever that you have.
Well, I wanted to comment on that is that you can't really become anything that you admire unless you have really overcome the things you despise. I despise working for other people. I despised commuting. I despised being told by managers and things like that that because I took 30 seconds to relax when I'm working twice as fast as the other people on a construction site, that I'm wasting his money. I despised all of these things. And I'm never going back. I can't. I can't do it. Okay.
I'm with you. I can't either. And I never used to despise those. And then when I woke up or whatever one wants to call, you step outside the sheep pen, to coin one of David Icke's phrases, you say, I can't do it. I can't do it. And I won't do it. And then all of a sudden you're an outcast lunatic because, and I mean, and it's not like they don't like you or think you're weird. They want to hurt you because you're out the pen. And they're not.
Yep.
And they'll never admit that even to themselves, let alone to you. But that's really what it is. And so, anyway, that's my vent for there.
You lose all your friends doing this, and you gain all new ones. Do you know how many friends I have from elementary school that are still my friends today? None. You know how many friends I have from high school that are still my friends today? None. Do you know how many friends I've had from university that are still my friends today? None. You know how many friends I have today that are from any work that I've ever been in? None. And you wouldn't believe how many friends I have because yeah. I have shed the dead wood. And you create quality relationships if you're doing the right thing with your life. My father told me, I'm not friends with anybody who can't build anything. All my friends are electricians builders or car mechanics or something like that. Creative people who can make something, and you'll find out that you can sort the wheat from the chaff, and that when people are telling you that you're no good when you're doing the right thing, you suddenly realize they're just accusing you of being what they are. You're better right. than them. You're actually the good person here, Laurie. You're actually the one doing the right thing. You're the kind of salt-of-the-earth character that will actually make this world a better place. And they're intensely jealous that
well,
they haven't made
our,
it.
Yeah, this is where our stories differ a little bit, because my dad was 30 years in the Air Force, so elementary and high school friends, that's kind of a moot point. It never did exist. But family and neighbors, ones I had, I can relate. Anyway, why don't you take the last couple minutes, let people know how to get a hold of you and your listen to your radio station, get to your website, whatever you have, and if there's any books or videos that you have.
Okay, let me see. So there is 2, 3, 4. All right, so there is the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. That's the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. is Vinnie with a Y, because it's the most important question, allegedly. 5 days a week, 2 hours a day, broadcasting live from New Zealand, live from the future. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you go freaking nuts. We get on the best and the brightest, and some of the people that you never heard before, and the mentality of the show is ruled by one principle, just to have fun. So if you're tired of listening to people and getting into the fetal position and being really upset about stuff and really not doing anything about it, come and listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. And you will learn more listening to this show in 6 months than you have in the last 20 years of listening to other people's radio shows. I am serious about this, and I've had emails from listeners who've been listening to Art Bell and George Norrie and things like that since way back in the day. And this is what they have told me. The reason being is because of the massive variation in guests. Massive. Every single topic you will be exposed to, given the time to listen. And they will all be fun to listen to. I make sure of it. Secondly, that's on AmericanFreedomRadio.com.
All the shows are archived, so they're really, really good for you, nice and free. If you want to subscribe for $5 a month or $1 a month or $20 or $10 or whatever, just support me in what I'm doing. Go to TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com, click donate or click subscribe. Give me some money so I can keep doing what I'm doing. Keep giving the people who deserve the coverage they deserve. Secondly, there's guerrillamedia.co.nz and realguerrillamedia.com, accept no imitations, where we have a lovely collection of contributors and activists from all over the world who aspire to the highest levels of integrity and ability to expose scumbaggery. We're all there together to do the right thing. And lastly is my YouTube channel, Mr. News Guerrilla Media. It's Guerrilla Media with one R, and Mr. News is, and hello, I'm Mr. News, there are copious quantities of videos being uploaded daily for your consumptive enjoyment. Please share. Please enjoy the content that I create. But by all means, do something yourself. That is a hell of a lot. That would mean a lot more to me than just watching one of my videos or listening to one of my radio broadcasts. Thank you.
Well, Vinny, thank you so much for joining us this evening and sharing all your experience. You're a young man, but you obviously very well researched. Sounds like you've got many, many guests that you have on. I'm trying to do the same thing myself, get people of diversity. I suspect we could actually go into an hour overtime without any problem, but it's probably getting late there. I don't know. I keep the time zones and the international dateline. It gets me all goofied up, but I do thank you so much for coming on. I know Suzanne Posel has spoken very highly of you. I guess she's on your show, and sometimes I don't know the whole thing there. But I think this is probably more than enough. I expect at least most of this audience is pretty well satiated. They're pretty well-informed audiences, those that follow us on a regular basis. So that being said, thank you so much. You have a good evening. Folks, thanks for joining us this evening. Lord willing, we will be back here tomorrow evening with another guest. Can't think of who it is now because my head is spinning. But everybody have a good evening and good night, folks. Thanks again, Vinny. Bye-bye.